This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Martin. We'll move now into our panel. If you look on your programme, we're talking about keeping library services relevant. What we have here, three seasoned and well-known campaigners for the public library service, people who've worked tirelessly to support and promote their library services. And I'd like to do this in reverse order, if we may. So if we can start with Henry Higgins, then Tim Coates, and then Shirley Burnham. Yeah. 5 minutes each, and then we open it up to you.
Well, I won't waste 5 minutes of your time. I'm sure questions are more important than me rattling on about various things. But just after that last presentation there, it does actually sort of remind me why, in some ways, a lot of library services are wondering why we haven't got money to renovate or modernise when we come on to these sort of really expensive ideas. I mean, they're very expensive. I mean, an iPad will cost you over £400. I don't think any local authority would be slaughtered in the press if they ran out and bought 10 of those for the users. Also, RFID is another in my opinion, a slight waste of money on small libraries. If you have a library that's four floors, it's absolutely fantastic and it's a brilliant offer, but putting it in small libraries is really just a waste of time. A librarian should know the stock that's in the library and be able to find it quite quickly. We started in 2006. I was very fortunate to be lucky enough to be given the position of being responsible for libraries. And that came on the back of a success for finding additional funding, external funding, for a first 50 movie pool in London. So my colleagues were very sort of, not flattering, I suppose, the wrong word, but they thought I was a sportsman and didn't understand anything about cultures and art. They didn't know that I went to art college, which just sort of gives me a good stead, and I'm a qualified graphic designer as well. So when I looked at my particular service, it was very dreary, and I could understand why the general public were not, and my residents were not, interested in using it. I did some a little bit of research and found in 2006 that book sales were £1.2 billion. So it's very clear that there's definitely an appetite for books. It's not something that was a dying service. It was obviously, it wasn't just really marketed in the right way. I set about using my, I sort of educated myself, and I put myself through college, and I had to sell shoes, and was very much involved in the retail business. So I had a lot of background experience of how retail works, but I didn't know too much about books, and I got some consultant to come and help me for a month, sitting next to me, I think he was. And it was quite nice because with my sort of retail background and Tim's, the ideas that I wanted to do was really how to, coming from that background, how can we impose those sort of, or try to develop something on that basis. I wanted to use retail fitters because I know they're cheap, and they're cheaper than what normal council will use to fit out anything. There's always problems with local authority when it comes to procurement. There's very much difference between private and public, so it's something that you have to sort of try to get grips around of how to do these things. But I went to the leader. We had just rebuilt our new library, which was in Ruislip Manor, and we were just about to fit it out for the tune of £90,000. And I went to the leader and I said to him, look, can I have a go my way, using retailers? He said, oh, I don't know, you know, how much is that going to cost? I said, if I save you £30,000, would you let me do it? And he said, yeah, of course, why not? And the rest, in some ways, is history. But I think one of the things that I would like to clear up, because I've kept very quiet about this over the years, obviously with I'm a Conservative and the other government. Starbucks was my idea in libraries. It was not anything from the last predecessors. We had an opportunity, I wanted an opportunity to give my residents the opportunity to have a whole experience of a bookshop. And I approached various companies, and the only one that came back was interested was Starbucks. We do a deal with Starbucks in the sense that we run it, we buy everything from them, the machines and the product, and we sell it. The library has made over £20,000 in the last 2 years on that, and we've invested approximately nearly £12,000 of that back into the service. As I asked the leader if we could make sure that it's ring-fenced so it actually feeds the service, and he was quite willing to do that. Also, it's 30% cheaper than on the shops, and also the residents take it to be theirs. It's theirs because they are actually contributing back into their own service, and they feel very proud of that. And really, I think the main thing for me is that all of you are more than welcome to come down to Hillingdon and have a look at them. But don't talk to me, come talk to my residents and see how popular they are. From a 6,000 usage in 1 year, it is roughly nearly 15,000 to 16,000 usage. Book issues are 14,000. So it just shows that if you can do it right and you can do it cost effective and value for money, it is possible. Okay,
thank you Councillor Higgins. Tim, I will make sure everybody gets applause, but we'll move straight through.
Oh, thank you. I want to talk very quickly. In this morning's session, I think that there is an elephant, as it were, missing from the room in all the discussions that we heard, and that element is what library users and the public actually want from their public libraries. There's a lot of talk about that we should do the things that the public wants, but in no talk, none of the presentations this morning, does anybody actually articulate what that is. Miranda talks about what it is for children, and she always does, and she's very good at that. But no one ever talks about what adult users want from their library service, or just ordinary people. Nearly three quarters of the people in the country read, and read regularly, whether it be books or whether it be newspapers or whatever. But only half of those choose to use public libraries. And it's not because there's something wrong with them. They choose not to use public libraries because the public libraries are not terribly good, in the sense that they won't have the things that you want to read, that the buildings are not in very good shape, they're actually rather dirty and scruffy and down at heel and a bit like charity shops. And they are often not open when they need to be. I represent a group of library users from around the country. I'm chair of LLL, which is the London Users Group, which represents sort of 100 user groups in London, and the library campaign represents a huge lot more. And we have made a kind of coalition of library users from all over England, and we've written a charter, which is what the minister is referring to. Library users and the ordinary public set priorities, which are that they want books in their libraries, they want their libraries to be open, they want their libraries to be smart, and they want to have each library to have some autonomy so that the local librarian can respond to the needs of the local community. They want library authorities not to waste money on other activities. They don't want to know of a million social agendas and council activities that go on in the libraries. That is not what the public wants. And so I challenge you, really, now to begin to respond not to council agendas, not to government agendas, in exactly the way that the minister says, not that government shall set the agenda for you, but I challenge you now to respond to the agenda that is the right agenda that the public will set for you, and quickly and urgently to address the problems of the public library service, most particularly those which relate to the efficient operation. I got a chance this week to see the budget for the Wirral, the budget book, about which there was so much controversy last year, and a national inquiry. Within that budget book, which is about £6 million, £7 million in total, there is £1 million of money that makes no difference at all to the public service. Nobody said that throughout the whole of that inquiry. If that had been known, there was no need for dispute, there's no need for restructuring, there was no need for one second to think about closing a library. And I think it's about time that we address the issues of efficiency properly, effectively, quickly, because what library users will not tolerate when there is a cut to the funding, which there will be, of 20 and 25%, any authority which suggests that they should shut libraries when they have not, after all these years, most thoroughly addressed these issues of operational efficiency. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Shirley?
Well, I'm not well known, but I'm Shirley Burnham from the town of Swindon, which is a very nice place to live. What I've found since using a very small library, rather like the one the minister was describing when he just couldn't quite work out what he was describing, as rather a small thing, he called it. And I think he must have been thinking of a trip he made to Swindon to visit my library a couple of years ago, when he came down and saw this thing and was amazed how much passion was generated by this small area, which is about five times the size of this desk area. It's absolutely stuffed with books. It has a computer that's used all the time the library's open. It's housed in a small shop, really. Mr. Coates once referred to it as a laundrette. But it's charming, and it's got a big plate glass window. You can see in from the street what's going on, and you can see out from inside who's coming in. And we don't need Starbucks coffee in there, because we have half a dozen or a dozen coffee shops just around the corner. So it's all good stuff. We've been two and a half years trying to save this library from the chop, and good old Swindon Council has finally decided it's going to keep it for the people of Old Town. But they have also decided to co-locate us, which is one of those awful modern words I'm not too excited about, but they are at least co-locating us not in a doctor's surgery or in the fever hospital, but they are co-locating us in an arts centre, which at least has some synergy with what books and libraries are. And you might be aware that Old Town Library Campaign is joining up with this great chap here with his new coalition for library supporters, which is going to go across. And hopefully, well, I've been reading about it, so hopefully a lot of people will join in. I do have to say that Mr. Coates did produce a report for Swindon Council a year and a half ago, and that's still on the shelf down there in Swindon Council, I assume, and I hope now that MLA is citing Hillingdon as an example of best practice that Swindon will look at this report again, dust it off, and perhaps take some steps to look at things again to see if the future is going to be let's have libraries, let's have refurbished libraries, let's have better libraries, let's listen to people. What normally happens for the normal punter like me is you send off hundreds of emails and you don't get many answers. I've never had proper responses from DCMS. I do get answers from the chaps at the MLA, not always the ones I want, but at least they're polite and they do answer. DCMS, never. I think they wash their hands of the whole thing. And although ministers very nice and he's a new minister, so let's hope he really does support libraries. But please, DCMS, MLA and Society of Librarians, who I don't usually meet librarians, I meet library assistants, and they're the ones the public really love. And although we talked about books and libraries and stuff, people we get excited about in the library, people that use libraries are library assistants who basically are treated a bit crap by the service that they serve. They're absolutely splendid and they have all sorts of knowledge and all sorts of degrees and things that may have nothing to do with libraries, but they're perfectly brainy and shouldn't be ignored, and we like having them. So when we managed to persuade, I suppose, Swindon Council to help us keep our library, and they decided to keep it, they also decided to let us keep one member of staff, and that was as important, really, because they had wanted it to be entirely run by volunteers. And we have managed to keep one member of staff. So we're very up the staff. And I believe there's a demonstration in Winchester on the 10th. 10th of July, and I think that'd be quite fun. I think I should go to that. Anyway, that's about something completely different. But staff, we love the books, we love the libraries, and we care about the staff. And I just think it's really important that when we campaigners aren't just seen as whinging about cuts, you think we need a reality check, but we're asking you to focus on making savings that don't impact on those who really love and need the service. Yeah.
Thank you, Shirley. So we've gone over time a little, but that's partly because we allowed the Minister some extra questions. So I'm proposing just to go five minutes beyond the timetable, subject to demand for questions. So we've had three impassioned people talk about how they think the library service should be and how important the library service is. We've had an insight into a new way of delivering a much-loved medium for reading. What are your questions or comments? Could we start here at the front, please? I'll take two or three and then ask the panel to deal with that.
No.
Is that okay? Could you start with your name, please?
Kathleen Frenchman. I'm from Libraries for Life for Londoners and Friends of Islington Libraries, and I'm a library user. Now, I think the rot set in when library users, readers, started being called customers and were asked what they wanted. Because all the best things in this life have been provided for people, the public, by people who have had inspiration and imagination. And I think we need some inspiration and imagination at the top of the library service to give us what we didn't know we wanted.
Thank you very much.
Who can answer that one?
In the middle there, Lisa. No, further down.
Hi, my name is Lisa Forsyth. I was just interested from what Tim was saying about all the users wanting and how you represent a number of users. I guess the question is, have you had much discussion with non-users of libraries? Lots of people read, not as many people use libraries, to understand why they're not using libraries.
Yes.
Another one. Lorraine, there.
Hi, I was interested in Tim's comments as well about users, because I'm guessing if we looked at the profile of the users that are in your group, they're slightly different to some of the users that I've got in my libraries. Mm-hmm. And I do have a really good community profile of my libraries, and I have to provide things that actually help people to learn to read, you know, so then they can then go on to express their choices, and then they may come to some conclusions about the books, but we actually have to get them started on that learning journey. So we do have to link into other agendas, and often these people come with other agendas, like health, mental health in particular. We run book chat groups for people with early onset Alzheimer's, you know, so our profile to the profile of your groups, I think you'd find would be slightly different.
Right, so we've got three points, questions there. I think a very challenging one for some of us about how you view that inspiration is needed from those people who run the public library service. We'd like a bit more information about I think it's really relating to the charter you refer to, Tim. What discussion has there been with people who don't use public libraries, and how varied has the consultation been with, you know, in a truly representative type of library customer or user, I beg your pardon, or borrower, to be reflected in your charter? But I wonder about that inspiration thing, Shirley. Do you think we should be giving more inspiration for users of public libraries? Is there a lack of inspiration? There's quite a dilemma there because...
Well, who's in charge? That's the trouble. If it's the Secretary of State, are they inspired? Are they inspired? I think Mr. Hunt's probably very nice. I've heard he's a very nice chap. And this Mr. Bazey's also known as a very nice, affable...
Well, I know that we're not loved, but do you think we're inspiring?
No.
Well, I think you're a very honest person.
Well, you're fine, but I mean, you know...
That's damn with faint praise.
I mean, look at Mrs. Hodge. How inspiring was that? And I tend to be more in that direction than that direction. And yet here I am saying, you know, this Mr. Henry Higgins is doing all the right things. So let's not make it political. But Mrs. Hodge, for me, was dire.
But I think there was an important point that you feel that. The library service doesn't provide you with the opportunities for reading and entertainment that you would like to see. Is that what you mean?
I think there's something a little bit unmotivated about library stuff. And I think libraries are not high up on local authorities' political agenda. Time was when the chief librarian was a head of department. And as decades have gone by, the head of libraries have gone further and further down the hierarchy, which doesn't help any of us. But I meant really, in a way, the sort of central leadership of libraries. I do think we need somebody who has real vision and inspiration and drive. And I didn't think Mr. Vasey was inspired.
Tim, then, how representative of the very broad readership and the non-readership of the country is your charter?
Could I answer that first? And then Tim, I'll answer the question and pick up the...
Well, it's not normally, but you can, I'll let you.
I think there's... Yeah, we call them... We put... What we say in Hillingdon is we put our residents first. There is a lack of inspiration, but that also has to be taken on the responsibility of chief librarians as well. It can't be just one of those things that, oh, we haven't got anywhere. I mean, there's lots of authorities that have been protecting staff rather than protecting the service. I mean, that is a fact. The problem is that when I looked at this, you have to look, let's be perfectly honest. Right, the last election was last May, and for the first time, we got 57% of the vote. The last time I was elected, I got 36%, and I was elected into a seat. Now, that's probably another subject about politics, but the question is that I wanted to engage with 100% of my residents, not my electorate, not my people that love libraries, my people that don't use libraries. You have 25% of the population will always use libraries, no matter what situation or state it's in, because they just like using libraries. You have 25% will never use libraries because they'd rather have an iPad, to be honest. And then there's the others that are not sure. So if they're going to retail outlets and spending £1.1 billion on books, there obviously is an appetite there. So you have to create an atmosphere where they feel comfortable and they want to come in. And in Hillingdon, we've done that. We've offered them coffee. You know, the biggest critics I got about coffee was from librarians and from some of the media, thinking, oh, how horrible, globalisation in a library. Well, sorry, that's the way it is. We also made sure that we had books that were relevant. Katie Price, David Beckham, our shock horror. Well, no, we do it. They were the books that go out. Children's books, we make sure we have Spot the Dog, Thomas the Tank. In Hillingdon, we have made sure that there is every avenue of our population that is catered for. You have your mums and your toddlers can have a cup of a mum can have a cup of coffee, and young Johnny can go into play in their library and have loads of books. And we don't do a limit on how many books they're allowed to take out.
Then we have the teenagers that come into our libraries, and they can use Apple computers, and they can watch telly, but it's on subtitles. Surely a library service is about engaging into the population to make more people read. It shouldn't be about anything else. Yes, other things, we can offer other things, but it's all about reading. Where a 16-year-old is using an Apple computer surfing the net, they are reading. Whether they're sitting down watching the telly with subtitles, they are reading.
Can it's I just interrupt, please? Because I think there was a specific question addressed to Tim about how representative the consultation on the charter has been.
Well, let me pick up Henry's point about segmentation, which is a word that was used this morning. If you think of 100 people in the population, there will be 25 who are the devoted library users. These are the ones who would campaign, you know, when go on the streets when if a library is threatened with closure. There is then another 50% of the people who read, who are intelligent, who are of the same manner of thinking, who would use the library if they thought it was going to be useful to them, if they choose to do so. And then there is the remaining 25%, as Henry says, of people who basically, for one reason or another, don't read. In that final 25%, you can spend a lot of time, as you do, with some of them, persuading them, encouraging them, and helping them to learn to read. Well, fine. There are some for whom it will be like sending petrol to people without cars. They are just not interested. But the bit that I'm most interested in is the 50% in the middle. And the answer to your question is, oh, yes, you're right. I talk to a very particular group of people who do use libraries, and they use them in a devoted sense for reading. But I trust their judgment, because they are not just speaking for themselves. They know the intrinsic value of a library. So that when they say consistently from all over the country, from Dorset to Northumberland to the Wirral to Swindon to all around London, these are the things that a library needs to do. They're not just talking about themselves, they're talking about the work it should do for children, the work it should do for, you know, people with impaired sight. They understand all that. But what they still say is that the essence of what makes a library valuable to all these groups is that it must be a nice place to go, it must have the books that you need, and it must be open at the times that you need them. Those are the priorities that we should be addressing, and yet in all the discussions that we talked about this morning, or listen to the whole thing, not one person talked about, seriously, about opening proper hours, smartening up the buildings and improving the stock, because we talk about everything else in the world apart from those things.
Thank you very much. I think we've just got time for one more, if anybody's got anything they would like to say. Yes, please. Sorry, was there someone further back? I beg your pardon, I must go in order.
About the profile of the users, and I understand, Tim, what you're talking about, the 50%, but you're still talking to those people who can articulate, and we're talking to people who we're helping to actually read and to articulate. You know, you've got to include them in, and we do in our consultations and our community engagement, and that's what we base our services on.
Why do you think I exclude them? I don't. Of course I don't.
Well, thank you. Peter Richardson, once again. Sorry, but this one is directed mainly at Mr. Palmer. The e-book. The e-book?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people are using e-books, and they're renting them, if that's the right word, through their library service. But you've got a 21-day file life, mm-hmm, when it automatically cuts off. Unlike a book, if you haven't quite read it, or you've forgotten, or whatever, you are then taking your book back to the library and you suffer a fine. Mm-hmm. Fines, I find, are a remarkable large chunk of money which goes into a library service. And you're denying yourself this with the e-book service, such as the Overdrive, which cuts itself off after 21 days. Mm. Is this not something like shooting yourself in the foot?
Can I just... I know Grace was anxious to say something, and I know I contradict myself all the time. Be very quick, and then we'll pick them all up, and that'll be the last questions.
Grace Kempster. I just wanted to say something about the library staff. I do meet the user sessions on Saturdays personally, and I talk with customers and with staff. And I just want to say something, I hope on behalf of everyone in the room, which is how inordinately proud we feel about our frontline staff and the way in which they deliver helpfulness and extraordinary support in ordinary settings right across the country every day. And I just want to reassure you that we do value them because they are the lifeblood of the service. Thank you.
Thank you, Grace. And losing a chance to make money on fines.
Yeah. I wasn't saying it was easy, and I think it depends on what your view of overdue charges are for, is what it boils down to. Overdue charges, it seems to me, are there to make the best use of the stock and to make sure that it circulates correctly. It's not a way of making money out of people simply because they forgot to bring the stuff back. If they do forget to bring it back, then the fines are an incentive for them to do that. If the fine system is working correctly, no fines will be paid by anybody at all because they'll all bring the books back on the same day. I do appreciate that, you know, for some library services, the overdue charge is a large part of the income that they make. But I think we do have to look at what we're trying to do, really. And there are increasingly numbers of library services that send people reminders before the books are due back. And so that's another thing which is going to reduce your fines income if that's what you're basing the service on. I would suggest that if you're basing your service on getting more money out of people simply because they're forgetful, that's not really a very good approach. I didn't deny that, but I'm just saying that there are good ways of making money out of people and bad ways, and I suspect that's not a very good one.
We will have to draw it to a close because we've gone over time. That was a really interesting session, and it is very important that we don't become polarised, because everything that, there is always a view that's worth taking back and looking at. I would like you to join me in giving a round of applause to our panel and to Martin for the This is the last plenary session.